Hi everyone, it's a whole new episode. My name is Maseke Rioba and today we ask, is identity a human right? So this conversation was greatly inspired by Sustainable Development Goal 16, specifically Target 16.9, whereby 2030, we should be able to provide legal identity for all, including free birth registrations. Citizenship is the recognition of an individual by the state and their ability to enjoy privileges granted to a citizen. This level of identity is extremely important because it makes it possible for one to enjoy their social rights, their cultural rights, economic as well as political rights within the confines of their society or their country. For most of us, citizenship is not such a big deal a conversation. Getting our birth certificates or getting our national identity cards were not a problem, and so somehow we tend to have the illusion that nobody in this world would have a problem getting their identification card or getting their birth certificate. However, for most marginalized communities, citizenship is a luxury that only a few people can afford. And most times, due to lack of documentation, at least a third of the human population are cut off from accessing the rest of the world. So when it comes to things like better commodities or livelihood or socioeconomic resources, they rarely get access to such things. In this particular conversation, we will talk to Yasser Musa. He has introduced himself from the Nubian Rights Forum. We will be discussing the Nubian community as our case study for today. But what we need to note is that the risk of statelessness or lack of citizenship does not only affect the Nubian community. In countries such as Cote d'Ivoire, at least 1.6 million of the population are at risk of statelessness. When we look at communities such as the Pemba in Kenya, the Makonde in Tanzania and Mozambique, all these are communities existing in states where they are at risk of statelessness. So this is something we should greatly be concerned about. And I hope through the conversation, we will shed light on identity as a human right and why it's important for us all to be keen on citizenship and identity as a human right, not just for ourselves, but also for the marginalized communities around us that do not necessarily have the right representation that will speak towards the policies that affect them. Now, allow me to add a little bit of flesh to the conversation before we begin. So in 2019, the Kenyan government strong-armed Kenyans into mass registration that will see Kenyans participate in mass registration using their existing identification documents through a miscellaneous amendment bill. So the bill was challenged by one of the organizations being the Nubian Rights Forum because of the historical discrimination faced by minority communities in accessing documentation. The team believed that if the process were to go forward as it was, at least 5 million Kenyans were at risk of statelessness and still are at risk of statelessness. Now, discrimination in this instance would occur because any Kenyan without an identity card at this point will be at risk of statelessness due to the lack of legitimacy of citizenship. Now, the Kenyan government provided no alternative to ensure that these communities will register in the new system. So other communities that would be affected were those impacted by double registration. Double registration refers to a citizenship issue where community members in refugee camps are unintentionally registered both as refugees and as citizens of a country. Hence, the confusion pertaining to their nationality occurs, and it makes them miss out on relief as refugees and also miss out on the benefits of being nationals of that particular country. Now, in a separate incident but very similar, Kenya's telco company Safaricom also issued a mandatory re-registration of mobile numbers. What will people need again? Their identification cards. Now, millions of Kenyans with no legitimacy and no documentation, including the members of the Nubian community, were locked out of registration as a result. So right now, some of them cannot communicate, they cannot make financial transactions, and they were cut off from the rest of the world. This is what begins our conversation today. On this episode, we talk to a member of the Nubian community advocating for the right to identity for the Nubian community. Please introduce yourself to us.
My name is Yasser Musa. I work with the Nubian Rights Forum.
Who are the Nubian community And what does it mean when we say they are at risk of statelessness?
Thank you so much, Ryoba. That's a very good question, but also needs a lot of history. When you look at the Nubian community, they have been in Kenya for more than 100 years. History states that they've been here since 1890, 1870. But when you narrow down now to the issues of nationality and citizenship, we go back to our constitution, chapter 3, which says that for you to be a Kenyan citizen, you must have been in Kenya before 1963. The 1963 is the time that Kenyan government got its independence. So anyone who was found in Kenya before 11th of December 1963 is considered to be a Kenyan citizen. So Nubians are Kenyans by birth, but they are at risk of becoming stateless because of the procedures they undergo when applying for documentation, whereby you have to prove who you are through going for vetting or providing extra documentation. Looking at Kenyan Gazette on documents that are needed for a person to be registered and be issued with a national identification card is you require your birth certificate, you require your living certificate, and a copy of your parent identification card for you to be issued with a national ID. But for the Nubian community, they're not only required to provide these three documents, they're required to provide full documents of their parents, original documents, that is ID. Some of them can even be asked to provide birth certificates of their parents. It even goes further that you can provide identification of great-grandparents. So these are some of the things that puts the Nubians at risk of becoming stateless. The vetting issue also. Yes, Ryoba?
So would you then imply that because of the amount of documents they are required to present during registration, that is what actually makes them be at risk of statelessness?
Yeah, there is a small line that separates the stateless communities and communities at risk of stateless. Because for stateless communities, it's direct. A nation or a state have refused to give nationality to these individuals. But when you look at someone who is at risk of stateless, this is someone who was born knowing that I'm a Kenyan, someone who's lived and gone to school knowing that I'm a Kenyan.
Maybe I just stop you for a second before you continue diving into the border between being stateless and being at risk of statelessness. What does this word, being at risk of statelessness, or the word statelessness, what does it mean first?
A stateless person is someone who is not recognized by law in any state. So that means if you don't have a birth certificate, you don't have identification card, you don't have a passport or anything that recognizes you to be a specific citizen in a specific country, then you become stateless. But for the persons who are at risk of becoming stateless, they face challenges whereby they are born to be Kenyans. Let's say, for instance, my mother is a Kenyan, she has an ID, but when it comes to my time to apply for identification card, they don't consider my parents' identification card. I have to also prove myself. That is why I have to go through vetting. And that vetting is a procedure that they registrars themselves are the ones to decide whether to issue with a document or not. But for the stateless communities, they completely don't have documents, and No, they don't have anything to move forward.
Okay. So, having established that the Nubian community is a community in Kenya, however, it is a community in Kenya that's an ethnic minority and at risk of statelessness, my question to you would be, are there other communities in Africa or probably in the world that are at risk of statelessness, or is this a Nubian problem only?
The issue of statelessness cuts across the world. And in Kenya, there are only specific groups, but there are many that are yet to be realized. This is the Somalis, they are at risk of becoming stateless. We have the Pemba community at the coast. They're yet to be recognized as Kenyans. And it is a good thing for the Kenyan government that we're telling them kudos. They are the Wanyarwanda, the Maragori community who are at the border of Kenya and Uganda, but they consider themselves to be Ugandans. So there are many stateless communities across the world. And when you look at the current situation, the Kenyan government and also Africa, they are moving on digital ID. And looking at the reports that are on social media or on the websites, in Africa, we have a population of 1.2 billion, and almost 500 million of these Africans, they are not recognized. So it means that stateless communities are more than 500 million in Africa. So this is something that needs to be discussed, and people need to understand the issues about statelessness.
The topic or the conversation we're having today is on identity as a human right. What is your understanding of identity as a human right? And do you consider one's identity to be an actual human right?
I can say it should be the number one priority, because in all aspects, just giving examples, opening a bank account, opening an organization of human rights, reporting a case in court, reporting a case of violation in a police station, even applying for a job opportunity, it has been narrowed down to identification card. So all human rights violations that we see, in order for the justice to be enforced and justice to apply, a document is needed, and that document is a national document. So citizenship is a key value to human rights, because children's issues on definement will not be solved out. Children who are having fights within parents and parents, without birth certificates, they cannot be supported. When a parent or there is a deceased person in your family, for you to get a will or for you to be considered to be given what is supposed to be rightful for you, you require a documentation. So I can say it cuts across in all angles, and this should be prioritized as documentation to be the key angle or the main object that drives out the issues of human rights.
When you mentioned the Nubian community and mentioned their history, you mentioned something about vetting. So why don't you help us understand the specifics? What is the normal procedure of documentation for a Kenyan citizen, or ideally, how should it be? And how is the process different or discriminatory for the Nubian community?
That's a good question, Rioba. Thank you so much. And it's good at least to separate these distinctions and make sure to clarify on vetting. The normal application for someone, I think I said it earlier, but I can still redo it. For a Kenyan to apply for identification card, remember there are three types of documentation and applications. There is passport, or actually four. There is birth certificate, there is identification card, there is passport, and there is the day that you'll die. Do you know you'll die?
Of course. Yeah,
definitely. So there is a birth certificate which is required for your death.
A death certificate,
yeah. Someone to apply for identification cards, that is an ID. You require a birth certificate. You require a living certificate. And this living certificate is needed when, in the event you do not have a birth certificate, for them to really estimate your age. Probably when you're in class one, the Kenyan system, they know someone who's supposed to go to class one is at 6 years. So the living certificate is to support you. And a copy of your parent, either your mother or your father. And this is a beauty because of the current constitution of 2010, which gave women an opportunity to confer nationality to their children. So both parents, you just require one document. Moving on to the Nubian community and other minority groups who are facing discrimination, vetting happens for the Nubian community twice in a week. That is the elders vetting on Tuesdays and Thursdays. An application of normal identification cards happen from Monday to Friday, but Nubians are only subjected to 2 days. And this vetting is the one that really has a lot of weight, whereby you are required to bring your birth certificate, identification cards of both of your parents, living certificate for yourself, and also other requirements that they might be also they might ask you in the near future. This vetting is a procedure and a process that takes time. For the first one is elders vetting, whereby you take your documents, they give you what do we call it? There is an affidavit that the elders use it so that they can give information about you, your background, if they know your family, as a supporting document. But this is not used as a supporting document. Sometimes it is used to increase more discrimination. For instance, if an elder had had an issue with your mother, your father, or your colleagues or your family, it is brought into the application of identification card. Yeah. So that brings the discrimination part. There is now the vetting number two, which we call it the chief's vetting. It happens once in a month. And this once in a month, it is a number of people who are supposed to apply for these documents. So, for instance, if the application is for 50 people, you're number 51, you will have to wait for another application. Mm-hmm. If you are number 500, you'll have to wait for another 5 months for you to undergo that vetting. And this vetting does not give you the proof that you are Kenyan, because you might go through vetting, they ask you questions, and then when your application is taken forward, it can be rejected. And one of the challenges why it is rejected, you're never told.
You're never given a reason.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then we have the last vetting. It's called District Security Investigation Committee. This takes place for people whose applications has taken more than 3 years, because the normal application is at 18 to 21. So for anyone who applies at 22 years, you're considered late application. And this vetting never happens specifically. It is a time that is chosen and they never know. Sometimes you might be out of the country, you might be away, but they require you to be there on a specific day.
Perhaps just to ask something before we get back into the technicalities of the discrimination that was faced by the Nubian community, let's slightly discuss one thing that's a very key conversation for the Nubian Rights Forum, as well as other members of the NIMS coalition, which I will just ask you to shortly explain on. Recently, you and CO, or rather your organization and CO, took the government to court concerning the Huduma Bill. Now, what is the Huduma Bill? How does it link to the Nubian community? And why did you and other organizations feel the need to take the government to court to halt that process?
Wow, you're returning back to some few years where we had really, really a big challenge with the government in terms of the issues of digital ID. NIMS is National Identification Management System, also known as Huduma Number. It was rolled out through a Miscellaneous Amendments Bill of 2018, and this was to be used as a unique identifier for all citizens in Kenya. One of the reasons why we went to court was, when you look at the architecture of Huduma Number or NIMS, it was not inclusive. The communities who are at risk of becoming stateless will still be facing discrimination when applying for Huduma Card, because when Huduma Number was coming, you were required to have a license, birth certificate, passport, or identification card for you to apply for Huduma Number. And these are still the documents that we are asking the government to give the Nubian community and other minority groups. So on our side, the issue of discrimination, we felt, if this carries on, then the Nubian community and other minority groups will be left out, because they don't have the prerequisite documentation that should be used to register for Huduma Number. Another thing was the public participation. When you look at how Huduma Number was launched, it is something that was stated by the executive. Within a period of 2 weeks, we are told it's going to have a pilot study, a project. Within a period of 2 weeks, then we, as you know, as Kenyans, we know something is supposed to undergo pilot process. You give us the risk analysis, tell us what has worked, what hasn't worked, so that you improve the systems. But when you look at the Huduma Number, it was being pushed. A pilot has been done. At the same time, they're rolling out the mass registration of Huduma Number. So them rushing made us really think straight on why should they be rushing about these issues. The issues of collecting more data and more information. Remember, by then, we did not have data protection into place. So them collecting the DNA, iris, the information of where do you stay, too much information were unnecessary, because we know the Kenyan government in profiling people, and we were asking ourselves, how are they going to be able to make sure that they protect the people's data and people's information? Yeah, so those are some of the reasons that made us go to court to prevent them from progressing.
So that was why you went to court. And the reason why I have asked the vetting question and at the same time also asked about the Huduma bill incident that is well known is because I wanted it to drive us towards a conversation where I'd like your opinion on, do you think the world is well informed on matters citizenship, and this should this conversation be a big deal? Because you mention at least 500 million Africans are at risk of statelessness, or probably they don't have documentation. But is the world quite aware how serious a challenge identification is?
One thing I can say, documentation is very important when it comes to the positives on how the government says, in terms of getting to know who is who, and also managing their future planning for the country. But the issues of citizenship is really taken lightly by institutions, the states, the UN agencies, and also the foundations. Because people, when you approach the funders, when you approach think tanks, when you approach researchers, many of them, they're telling you they are focusing on education, they're focusing on
climate
hunger management,
change.
Climate change. But we forget that all this processes, like I said earlier, sustainable development goal, they should focus on prioritizing nationality and citizenship. Because for you to talk about climate change, you need a document. For you to even go to a radio station or visit a TV or local TV station, you require an identification for them to access you, for them to let you in. For you to travel abroad, and probably you have a project that you want to make or something that will change the world, you require a passport for you to be able to travel abroad and share your stories. And we've seen people with talents, we've seen footballers, we've seen basketballers who've not been able to move forward in terms of going to other countries to explore their talents because of lack of this documentation. These are just footballers, but we've also seen students lacking scholarships because of lack of documentation. We've seen students missing out of opportunities. When you look at education, is a key sustainable development goal, safe cities and equalities, but the same stateless communities are at more risk of these violations because of lack of documentation. Yeah, so that is why it should be made as a mandatory toolkit conversation. Thank you.
In your own words, how would you link citizenship to sustainable development goals?
Sustainable development goals cuts across when it comes to issues of nationality and citizenship, because when you look at all goals, it focuses on equality, it focuses on zero hunger, it focuses on education, gender-based violence. So all these things are related to documentation. Giving an example, for you to take your child to get a bursary or get a school fees or scholarship, you need a birth certificate for you and your child to be able to get that scholarship. For your case on gender-based violence, whereby probably, God forbid, a child has been defiled, when you're reporting a case, you need a birth certificate so that at least the case can be taken forward. When you look at Sustainable Goal 16.9, it says, by 2030, provide legal identity for all and including free birth registrations. So as we progress, the only Sustainable Development Goal is 16.9, which focuses on free birth certificates. But you narrow down to Kenyan context, birth certificates are still not free. Issuance of documentation, you still have to pay some money. So the Sustainable Development Goal needs to be restructured, and there are some things that people need to put into place to make sure that there is inclusivity on citizenship and nationality.
Thank you for that. And when we are discussing vetting, I think there is something that really comes out that probably would require a bit of explanation from your side. Now, when you've told us the procedure of vetting, you've told us the different types of vetting, but there's also one issue that normally comes up for minority communities that is really important on in this conversation. In a short breath, we hear different instances and complaints about forceful name change during the procedure of citizenship and documentation. Now, how does this affect the identity as a human right for the Nubian community, and how does it affect overall the Nubian culture?
Thank you so much, Rioba. This is a tough question because it's something that not so many people discuss it, and also when we discuss it, we're putting other people at risk because of how they change their names. If I understood you clearly, it's about the application of the documentation. Narrowing down to the Nubian community, they face frustrations because of their names. Someone is called Muhammad Doka. Maybe you're living in Kisumu or you're living in Kisii. So the culture for the Nubian community and the way people have been brought, you're supposed to be following your tribe and your culture. But for the Nubian community, sometimes they are forced to change their names. If you're called Muhammad Doka, you should call yourself Muhammad Omondi in order for you to be able to be registered, because the word Omondi is a Luo name. Definitely, the questions that you'll be asked are minimal, unlike the people who can be called Yasa Musa. Those are tough questions that are going to be asked for vetting. And sometimes also when you change your name to another tribal name, it prevents you from going to vetting. And many Nubians fear vetting because sometimes they can ask you a question that you're not able to answer. So this is one of the reasons that has made people change their names to use other tribal names. And one of the risks that we've seen is the culture, the identity of the Nubian community is running away, it's disappearing. In the next 30 years, if all of my siblings are using the names of Luos, all of my parents or my children will use the name of Kikuyus, then it means in the next 30 years, I won't be able to be recognized as a Nubian because all my names, all my documents will be written Omondi Omondi, and that's the identity of the Nubians disappears. Why are you laughing?
It's because of the way you used Omondi Omondi as an example. Okay,
yeah, fine. It's easier at least for someone to understand it.
Again, identity in some way links back to your social and cultural heritage, and we need to protect that. Now, onto one of my final questions. Whose responsibility is it to ensure that communities are recognized and individuals are awarded citizenship status? And how can that specific docket become better?
That's a tough question because the role of government is clear. They are the ones who should be working day and night to make sure they recognize communities, they empower the communities, they make the communities have the knowledge of understanding what documents are needed, what documents aren't supposed to be put into place. When you look at the Kenyan government, they've been moving so fast in terms of digital ID and also pushing things on digitalization. But one of the main factors that brings about risks of nationalities is the departments are not well resourced. When you go to Kwale, you have to travel kilometers of road travel so that you can be able to apply for identification card or get your birth certificate. So government institutions, including the Ministry of Immigration, the Department of Civil Registry, the Department of National Registry Bureau, they need to make sure that they are open-minded and they can work with civil societies to make sure that they register Kenyans, they register communities who are at risk of stateless. Because it is not only the Nubian community, even the majority groups, when you have interventions and have discussions with them, they are still facing discrimination because sometimes you can be told Kitabu or Kitabu is a book, the book for printing your birth certificate are over. So mm-hmm. you need to come back next time. So these are some of the challenges that needs to be put into place to make sure the inclusivity of identification cards and nationality is put into place.
Thank you so much for your response here, sir. And that is totally on the side of the duty bearers. But for us as a people, as Africans, as Kenyans, as Nairobians, how can we make the world a better place for individuals at risk of statelessness?
I think it is important for civil societies and communities to understand what is citizenship, what is nationality, because when they understand this, it will make it easier for them to follow up. It will make it easier for their leaders to follow up, because sometimes you find a community is undergoing through difficulties on accessing documentation, but their leaders are enjoying. So we have to make sure that at least we bring those leaders to the community to understand the challenges and the gaps that communities face, to see how we can work with the state actors and also how communities can improve their skills in terms of advocating for their rights to be recognized as communities. So there is joint effort that is needed from community level, from leadership level to the national government, to make sure that everybody understands the importance of nationality and why they should be issued with documentation.
And we as a people, like as individuals, what's the one thing we can do that will probably increase awareness? Like, what are those things we can do that are practical, that are very individualistic in nature?
We need to follow up on the policies that are put into place. We need to make sure these deadlines that government sometimes they just come up with, we are able to stand clear and tell them, look, you need to make the processes clear before you come up with deadlines. For instance, they are starting the unique personal identifier, UPI. They launched the UPI in March of 1st, and they're doing public participation on Friday. So this is one of the challenges that they have put into place. You can't do public participation yet you've already launched something. So we need to be our brother's keepers to make sure that policies are put into place. The promises that the government have made, they are actually implemented. So that at least, for instance, they say they were going to recognize the Pemba community. We have to follow up. Have they been registered? They're going to recognize the Nubian community. Have they been registered? They want to distance themselves from the previous regime. Are they using the previous regime's documents and information to still lure people to register for this current digital ID? So we have to make sure that individually. Personally, I can say I will continue if you invite me in podcasts, invite me in events. What we are doing as Nubian Rights Forum, we are empowering the Nubian community. We're using social media platforms. We have radio presentations whereby we use it on a weekly basis to just get to know the knowledge on what communities understand about nationality. So this knowledge at least is the one that keeps them moving to be able to hold the government accountable.
Thank you so much, Yasa, for your insight on identity as a human right for the Nubian community. What are your final thoughts or words to the listeners?
I would like to tell the listeners to capture or see the issues of nationality as an important thing. And where a while back we talked about sustainable development goals, they should link this with sustainable development goals. They should do practicals, because if you don't do practicality on issues of nationality and citizenship, it is difficult, it is hard for you to really understand the gaps and the challenges that they are facing. For those ones working on education, go and look, go to schools, find out how many children can get scholarships without documentation. You will find little about it. For those ones working on gender-based violence, for those ones working on climate change, take a look at who are those forefront human rights defenders fighting for the rights of the minority groups or climate change. Do they have documentation? When you look at these samples, it will give you a clear picture on why it is important for you to make sure that you increase sensitization for at-risk communities, and you also increase sensitization to the government, and also finding opportunities to make sure that this discussion is kept up and people are able to discuss it to make sure that there is a change for issues around documentation.
Perhaps next time as you put your identification card in your bag or pull it out to check into security, the first question should be, how many people cannot access this particular gate because they have no documentation? The documentation conversation is very important, because if we are to achieve target 16.9, we need to work together in collectively asking that people who are at risk of statelessness are also given priority in getting birth certificates and identification cards. I hope this was a thoughtful, or rather a thought-provoking conversation, and that we will witness change, not just for ourselves, but for communities that for a very long time have not had people to support them. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this week's episode of Ufahamu Africa. You can find more episodes, show notes, and transcripts on our website, ufahamuafrica.com. This podcast is produced and managed by Megan DeMint, with help from production assistants Chukwufunanya Ikechukwu, Alex Kozak, and Ami Tamaklo. We are generously supported by the Carnegie Corporation of New York and receive research assistance from Cornell University and the University of California, Riverside. Our music is courtesy of Kevin McLeod. Until next week, Safiri Salama.